Welcome to Parents' Perspective. On a snowy winter day, I got out a pint-sized shovel and said to my then 6-year-old, "If you'd like to shovel the front steps, I'll pay you a quarter." He thought for a moment and then looked up solemnly and said, "No, but I'll do it for 50 cents." Whether it's impulse buying, long-term saving, or negotiating an allowance, our children's concept of money and how to manage it changes dramatically as they grow. From a parent's perspective, when, how, and what should we teach our children about money? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests today will offer some financial relief by helping us understand our children's changing concepts of money. Laura Johnson is a branch manager with the Sandy Spring Bank. She has been involved in the in-school banking program for elementary schools for several years, and she is the mother of a 4-year-old son. Welcome.
Thank you.
Robbie Snow has been a volunteer for several years with Junior Achievement, an organization that fosters a grade-by-grade curriculum from kindergarten through high school to help children learn about business. She's also the mother of 2 children ages 14 and 11. We're glad to have you with us, Robbie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Laura, what's the most common mistake parents make with children regarding money?
The most common mistake that parents make is just giving their children the money without educating them on the importance of that money, where it came from and why do they have it, and the responsibilities that go along with it for as far as saving, spending, things like that. But not educating them is probably the biggest mistake parents make.
In terms of educating, Robbie, what is a recommended age, do you think, to begin allowance, and what kind of expenses do you think it should probably cover?
Well, I think that is something that has to be worked out within the family, and every family is different, and every child is different. So to say that, 7 is a good age or 10 is a good age is difficult. You have to look at the child and what the child is ready for. There's one school of thought on allowance that you should just say, okay, you get X amount of money per week because that's what we've decided, and it's not 2 chores or anything. The other school of thought is they do a certain amount of chores, certain chores every week, and they receive an allowance. And if they don't do the chores, then they don't get that part of the allowance and things like that. And again, it's a personal decision. And I think you have to know your child. Some children can take it at, 5 and 6 and get 50 cents a week, and it's fine. Other children, they wouldn't have a concept at all about that. So,
yeah.
Should they get allowance before they have things they need to spend it on? If a 5-year-old gets allowance, what should he be using it for?
I would have to say, in agreement with Robbie, it's dependent upon the child. Not only are they having something to spend it on, but it will teach them the importance, like I was talking about before, the importance of saving and educating your children so that when it comes to that point, they're like, okay, I understand the baseball bat that I want is $10 and mommy and daddy don't think I need another baseball bat.
Do you think children should expect to be paid for babysitting for their own families? Babysitting is a little bit different. Most of us who have an older sibling kind of anticipate that that child will be able to stay home and take care of the younger one at some point, or younger ones.
Personally, I pay my 14-year-old and have for, a couple of years to stay, because I see it as a way where she can develop a sense of responsibility. It's not that she has to stay home with her brother. And there is some rules that are attached to that. Like it's a job, so you can't, beat up on your brother like you normally do. You can't.
Like if you went out to babysit someone.
I expect the same kind of behavior from her when she's taking care of the brother as I did when I had outside 14-year-olds coming in and taking care of her. So again, it's totally up to the family. I know some families don't do that. They see it as part of
the family network.
And, they're all working together and things like that.
Sometimes there are optional chores like shoveling the driveway or raking the leaves. Some families pay.
Some don't. Again, it's a personal choice.
Mm-hmm. Although I have always found when the kids get older, if there really are jobs to be had in the neighborhood, you're competing with other people, which I think sort of Pushes the paying for the job at home kind of.
I haven't had to deal with that yet, but I grew up with three younger brothers, so I know exactly what you're talking about as far as two of my three younger brothers were the lawn cutting, and my mom had to get on their schedule, and she had to pay them, she found, because otherwise her grass didn't get cut.
Right.
So,
yeah, you know, it's kind of supply and demand there. Mm-hmm.
Laura, what differences in expenditures should parents expect for elementary school, middle school, and high school children? I know they're quite different areas of expenditures.
At an elementary school level, the needs, from my experience of dealing with the elementary school students, their needs are very simple, and the parents really are, they're paying for a lot for that child, but you can keep a limit on what it is they're getting, I think. I mean, their limits, their needs are, or their supposed needs are, the toys and, you know, the smaller items. Once they get up into the high school age, which I've also had some consumer education presentations in the high schools in the area, their thoughts are on the cars, their thoughts are on the, you know, fashionable clothes and things like that. So the expenditures as far as the amount of money you're putting out is a lot more. But that's why, again, the education is so important, because maybe as a parent you can say, well, yeah, you want that pair of whatever pair of pants it is that they're buying these days, but you don't need it. So how are you going to, you know, how are we going to work on this, and how are we going to buy it? Because mom can't afford it.
Or that's not mom's priority.
It's not mom's priority. It might be your priority, but it's not mom's. Yeah.
We have a rule with our 12-year-old who is now a middle schooler, and they're usually interested in brand names and that kind of stuff. And if he wants sneakers that cost more than the amount that mom is willing to pay, then he has to make it up himself. And it's interesting what kind of consumers they are when it has to come out of their own pockets.
And they realize it's a little less important when it's coming out of their pocket than when it's coming out of mom's pocket.
So. Right.
One of my sons wanted a lot fewer clothes when he discovered they were all wearing polo shirts and it had to have that emblem on it. Mm-hmm. And he wanted one, and I wouldn't spend that kind of money on a shirt. Mm-hmm. And so he said, I don't need a lot of shirts. I need one favorite. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we started clothing allowance, mm-hmm. and I was the one who had to keep the records. But it was worth it, and it was a good idea because they did become more aware. Mm-hmm. Robbie, that's what we wanted to ask you about. How do we introduce children to budgeting?
You know, if they want the latest Barbie doll or something, you say, okay, the Barbie doll is $16.99. Your allowance is this, or, you know, if you do these chores, you will earn this, or however it works in your family. And then they have a goal. And then they can budget it. But if they come and say, well, you know, I want the $5 dress and that. And I said, well, you just have to add it on. Or you buy that now and you don't get it later. And I think that's one way of doing it. It's an idea of instant gratification is something that they have to learn to do without.
Mm-hmm. You know, and well, that comes with maturity.
Right, mm-hmm. and budgeting. But I think you can start it with, you know, the toy they didn't get for Christmas, or, you know, the one their birthday's in August and it's Christmas and they want it sooner than that. And you can just say, well, if you want it, these are the things you can do to earn it. And mm-hmm. you can save, you know, instead of going out to the ice cream truck every mm-hmm. day, you know, and spending $2 or $3, then, you know, maybe you ought to save this. I also know that some families who pay for chores, or, you know, who's have the lawn mowing business, as mm-hmm. your brothers did. It's a rule in the house to save in the bank half of what they earn.
With Sandy Spring Bank, as I mentioned, we have 20 branches, and I think we probably have 12 or 13 different in-school banks. And as far as the accounts that they set up, they're service charge free. They're earning interest. They're just like a regular savings account, and they come in every week, or some schools set it up for once a month, but they come in and make their deposits just as if they were going to the store to purchase their supplies. It's the same kind of concept. They're not allowed to withdraw, which is kind of nice. It reinforces the saving aspect of it. So in relation to what Robbie was saying about some families force you to save 50% of your earnings, my parents didn't really educate me, I think, about finances until I was in the middle school. And then once I started really working, they encouraged me to save 50, encouraged me, forced me, I'm not sure which, to save 50% of my paycheck as well. And I really learned from that, you know, I don't really need this extra $50 or whatever it was. And by the time I graduated high school in 2.5 years, I had enough money to pay for the first 3 years of my tuition. So it was kind of nice at college. So it's kind of gives you a good, hey, this will work if you stick to it as parents and as kids as well.
This sort of brings up the idea that when parents have little kids and the little kids have their 25 cents allowance or 50 cents allowance and they go to a store and they blow it on junk.
Lollipops.
sort of to let that happen so that the kids can see the logical consequences of it rather than saying, oh, no, you really don't want this. So then you've got this forced saving for so many years and with the kids not really learning to use their own judgment.
I think that's a good lesson with giving them their quarter and letting them go into the store and blow it, showing how quickly it can come in and how quickly it can go back out again. It is a good lesson. It's a hard lesson to learn, especially it's a hard lesson for the parent, too, because your temptation then is to turn around and hand them another quarter. But you have to force yourself as a parent, I think, sometimes, too, to, nope, going to have to wait till the next time.
Yes,
then let's see what you do with that quarter.
Yes, you may have another quarter, but you have to wait until
another
the next
week or whatever. Mm-hmm.
1 year when my son, who's now almost 20 years old, wanted a robot, and it cost $200. He wanted it for an occasion. And we said, no, you know, we don't buy toys that are that expensive. He returned everything he possibly could to the toy store after his birthday, and he got that with the credit. Mm. So that was an interesting lesson because he had things that he really liked, other items. But he figured out that if he returned them, he could have almost enough to get that. And he did, and he still has it.
Robbie, what do you think the best way is to teach children about investing?
There is an elementary program called Stock Market, which deals with this, where they actually do buy stocks and things like that. And it's mainly geared to fifth and sixth graders, which is 10 through 12, which would probably be the best age because by that time they have some idea. Junior Achievement talks more about the business setting up, I mean, what goes in on an elementary level, what goes into the business and things like that. It isn't until the high school level that they get into forming their own business and selling stock in that business and going from the beginning of developing the business and the product and selling the stocks and producing the product and selling the product. And then at the end, they dissolve the business. At the end of the year, they dissolve the business. And if you had stock in that, you got your check for 50 cents or whatever it was.
We had to buy a lot of flashlights when my son was in junior achievement.
Right.
That was the product.
Yeah, comb holders were big for a while.
Robbie, how are small business ventures a good learning tool?
Small business ventures mean like...
I guess like just what we're talking
the,
about.
The
lemonade stands.
The lemonade stands and things like that. It's a good learning tool because they learn what goes into setting it up and the responsibility for seeing it through. If you have a very motivated child, it works. If your child isn't terribly motivated, it's not going to happen. It's also a delayed reaction sort of thing. Like with a lemonade stand, you set it up and you have to buy the lemonade and get the pitcher and you have to buy the glasses from your parents, you know, saying, Mom, can I have X amount of these? And if Mom says, okay, but when you make the money, I get, you know, a penny a cup back. It is a very good learning experience and they can do pretty well. Many schools do car washes and things like that to earn money during the spring and fall months for various clubs and things like that. So it's a good idea. And I'm sure your brothers did pretty well mowing lawns.
I was going to say, for the first little while, they used Mom and Dad's lawnmower, and so Mom and Dad didn't pay them when they used Mom and Dad's lawnmower. But when they bought their own, and they aren't cheap, they're, you know, $500, $600, that Mom had to pay for that lawn cutting, so... There was an even exchange. It depends on what end you were on. But
yes, barter is a good form.
Bartering is very worthwhile.
What about after-school jobs for high school students? Any feelings on the value or problems with that?
I think that's dependent on the family, and I think it's dependent upon the student. I think primary, at least in my point of view, is primary and the child's importance, what they should be focusing on is their education. If they can't focus on their education, they shouldn't have a job. And I work with several women that have teenage children that this has become an issue where when they start working these after-school jobs, their grades drop. And they don't want to take away their after-school jobs from them because of what they are learning at the after-school jobs and the money that they're earning and the responsibility they're learning there. But the primary importance, I think, still falls back to if you don't get your education, you know, that's all they're going to be doing is that after-school job. So it really depends upon the child. I mean, I did fine. I still managed to get my good grades while working after school. But when things got tough for me, Mom cut me off, so...
It's good to have parents there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but the parents have to make the decision. You can't leave it up to a teenager when the grades are falling.
And it has to be a balance,
It has to be a balance.
That's where negotiation, I guess, comes in between the two. But the parent has to be, I guess, in the true control there.
Laura, how much of the family finances do you feel it's appropriate for parents to share with their children? I know that comes up from time to time in families.
I think it's... In some families, very important for them to share what's going on because it can be very stressful in some families that are having financial difficulties and the child is constantly asking for things. And it can kind of teach that child why it's important to make sure that you don't spend more than you have and you plan for things in the future. It can be a very good learning lesson, but it can also be a very depressing learning lesson at the same time. So it's really dependent, I think.
What's an appropriate response for parents when children want to know, how much money does daddy earn?
Enough. We're not going to starve. You know, that's a good thing. This friend of mine had been with a government agency for like 17 years, and he is recently retired. And his son, who's 10 or 11, has come to him and go, well, am I going to starve now that you aren't working? His wife is still working at another government agency and is bringing in plenty of money. But it's when there is a change like that, when dad or mom is settling home and the kid knows that, you know, that money was coming into the family, then I think it's time to sit down and say, mom or dad is still working. If it is a major change that is really going to affect the lifestyle, I think everybody needs to be in on that discussion.
Definitely.
Of saying, okay, this has happened and this is what we have to do to make sure that we meet our needs. It may mean that you can't take piano lessons or karate lessons anymore for a while until we get back on our feet, but that means that, you know, we can bring out the board games more.
That's fine. That's giving a positive substitute.
Because the kids will worry. I mean, they will blow it so far out of proportion. I mean, like this little boy decided that because his father had retired, he was going to starve. He was not going to be able to eat. And which wasn't the case at all. So you need to present it in a way that is reality-based. But also address their fears. We might only be able to get Domino's once a month instead of every week. But we can work on it this way. But I think you have to be open with your children about your financial situations within the limits of what they understand and what you're willing to, you know, you don't have to give them a dollar amount as long as they feel comfortable that they're...
Don't you think most young children can't really handle real dollar amounts, what it takes to run a home and insurance and a mortgage and all that kind of thing is not something to share?
That comes out very clear in the junior achievement lessons, where there's one lesson in third grade where they are doing a restaurant business. You know, they have to decide what kind of a restaurant they're going to have and what they're coming into, and then at the end they have to budget, you know, they have to put their figure out on a worksheet how much they're going to pay themselves and how, you know, after they do all of the lights and the electricity and the, you know, if they do pizza, the flour and the eggs and, you know, the pepperoni and the cheese and things like that, how much it is. Well, by the end they're all up and they're going to pay themselves $1 million.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to do that too.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, you know, they may have made 50 cents, but they'd still, and so
take the 50 cents and turn it into $1 million.
Right. So the concept of check writing Mm-hmm. That was interesting, yeah, because they had to write out $1 million, you know, and you have to know how to spell $1 million, you know, and some.
I'm not sure I could do that. I've given some presentations to children in the more challenging areas that the kids attend programs over the summer, basically to stay out of trouble. Great kids. The one session I can remember giving a presentation, we did two budgets. One is, what are you making now and what are you spending now? And, you know, to hear the things on entertainment and my clothes, mm-hmm. and my nails and my hair and things like that. And then I said, okay, what's going to happen when, you know, you move out from mom and dad and have to live on your own? And the shock coming out of the room was astounding. What do you mean I can't rent an apartment for $100 a month? And I'm like, I'm not sure where you're going to live. And realizing that they have to take cuts in their life already at the age of 18. And so I wish they had gone through these junior achievement programs all their lives. They wouldn't have been so shocked.
Good point.
Well,
we should probably ask you if there's anything either of you would like to add that we have not covered.
I think that children these days are a lot more educated because their parents are spending time with them, as well as community businesses and parents are getting involved with the kids at an early age. But there's still a lot of kids who are not. I give presentations where they don't know what savings about or interest is about, but then there's some kids in that same presentation that want to know about mutual funds. And these are 8 or 9-year-old kids, so we've gone a lot of way in educating the children, but we still probably have a long way to go.
Well, we wish we could move this topic on to helping parents manage our financial resources. It's a whole different program. But we would like to thank Laura Johnson and Robbie Snow for giving us their guidance about children and money. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective.
Are there topics you would like to hear about on this program? Do you have tips for other parents? If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for Parents' Perspective, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. Or email us at parentspur@aol.com or contact us, care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.